Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I'm your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I'm a medicine man, and my chosen modality is the written and spoken word. My medicine bundle is open. I've lit the incense and offered it to the four directions. I invite you to sit with me in sacred ceremony. If you are an agent of the government, you are, of course, welcome to listen, but bear in mind that the words and actions of the medicine man in ceremony are protected under federal and international law. You can join the conversation by tweeting me at Mudtoe Sasquatch, MudToeSasquatch, or by email at MudToeSasquatch@gmail.com. And now, Mudtoe at Midnight. You know, I just remembered something I was going to do last week, or take care of it sometime this week anyway. You know, long-time listeners will recall that introduction there has a little flaw in it, that flaw being that I don't have a Twitter account anymore. But I found this wonderful thing called Twitterfall. That's TwitterFall, as in a fall of Twitters, twitterfall.com. And someone like me who is not on Twitter can nonetheless follow tweets that have the little hashtag on it. So I would say, in theory, if you were to put Mudtoe Sasquatch, hashtag Mudtoe Sasquatch, it ought to show up in on Twitterfall, even if I don't have Twitter. So I'm setting that up right now to ATCH. And, okay, now, so if someone out there is listening and happens to have Twitter and happens to want to tweet me a twit or whatever it is, you certainly ought to be able to do that now if this works. And so perhaps we will find out during this 30 minutes. I don't know exactly how to test it other than to be in touch with someone who actually is on Twitter, and I don't know too many people who I communicate with in the real world. But hopefully someone is out there with a Twitter account, and you can send a tweet with a hashtag Mudtoe Sasquatch in it and see if I pick it up here at Mudtoe Studios. Otherwise, I'll just go on with the show. Hi, I'm Mudtoe. This is my show, Mudtoe at Midnight. We are here on the With Insights radio channel of blogtalkradio.com. I share this channel with some delightful other people on Mondays at 6 p.m. You can listen to Iggy and Rosa do their intuitive readings. I'm going to be on that show, not this coming Monday, but the following Monday. We're going to be doing a everybody get together kind of thing the last Monday of every month, I'm told. So that'll be happening. That'll be fun. Tuesdays at 7, we have the Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with Jenny Seek. Wednesdays at 3 p.m. is the Entrepreneurial Excellence Show with Heather Tapia. And then Fridays at midnight is me, Mudtoe Sasquatch, here with you, Mudtoe at Midnight. Once again, thank you for joining me. It's a good drinking game. You can count how many times I thank you for listening to me, but it's all kind of concentrated at the beginning and at the end. So, what shall we speak of this evening? I'd like to start off, or I don't know if I say I'd like to start off. I want to start starting off with something in a positive vein, because I'm working on my manifesting, and I'm trying to manifest this job I'm trying to get, which I'm going to hear about next week, by the way. I had my face-to-face interview this past week. I think it went pretty well. You know, they didn't seem terribly upset by anything I said. So, fingers crossed, I know that they're interviewing one more person, and then I'm supposed to find out next week. And if it's a good result for me, then I start the following week. So, time to practice my manifesting. Manifest this job that I want. So part of that, I think, is I would be positive if I want to draw positive things to myself, because if I'm too negative, which I often am, that I draw negative things to myself is what I'm told, is what my New Age friends tell me. So I will start off my show with some good stuff, and hopefully that will bring this job to me that I want. I understand that this evening at Garcia's International Restaurant, my friend Iggy's place, which is just around the corner from me, I didn't get there this evening, but I understand this evening through Facebook posts that Little Jeezy had stopped in today for a taste of Iggy's Mexicali chicken. So kudos to Garcia's for attracting a celebrity-type person because, as we all know, celebrities are much better than the rest of us. Okay, now, did I just blow the whole positive thing by saying that? Is cynicism really negative, or is it just – I see cynicism as realistic. I see sarcasm as realistic, not so much as being negative, unless it's aimed at someone. I didn't aim that at Mr. Jeezy. I don't know a whole lot about Mr. Jeezy. I recognize the name. But you know, I'm sure he's a very talented person. I don't mean to denigrate him in any way. I'm glad he came to the restaurant. I'm sure he enjoyed his meal there. But I don't see, you know, the fact that why is he different? Why is it different? Because a famous person was there as opposed to anybody else. That's the only question that I'm raising. Now, if I'm going to raise that question, does that mean that energetically I am messing up my chance to get this job that I want? It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. But then again, a lot of things about the universe don't seem to make a lot of sense to me. So let's move on. Congratulations to Iggy. Congratulations to everybody out at Garcia's for having a famous person stop by. I don't want to do anything bad to that at all. Okay, so there are fancy words that I wanted to use, but they tend to not come to me at this time in the evening. My fancy machine starts to shut off at about 11 o'clock at night and say, why the hell aren't you in bed? Especially if this job I'm taking, this is going to be really interesting for the show. If I get this job, it's a 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. type of thing. So I would be up at like 5:30 in the morning. And then I'm going to come back home and get some dinner on Fridays and do this show. That ought to be interesting. Ought to be very, very interesting. Okay, so enough with the Jeezys. We also have the National Hockey League coming back this week. They have settled their differences, the players and the owners, and they get back on the ice on Saturday. Kudos to them. I know some people have talked about possibly withholding their patronage because of the vile and reprehensible way both sides in this dispute have treated the people who provide the money for all of their fun and games, that is the paying customers, the fans. Somehow I just don't see much coming out of that. It never really seems to. You know, people like hockey, they go to where they can get hockey. And it's an unfortunate side effect of capitalism that often we see the product that we want is all in the hands of one provider, and that has happened in the case of professional sports. Certainly, that's pretty much happened with computers, automobiles, domestically at least. We only have three. And you could say that's really only two because two of the three companies are controlled by the government. This is a process of consolidation. You know, 90% of the media outlets in the United States are controlled by six companies. And I'm sure that will consolidate further as time goes on. So it's just sort of a natural process. You come to a point where, you know, if you want to get TV, you're only going to be able to get it from one company. And it's right now, if you want hockey, and you want hockey at the highest level, at least, you can only get it from one place, and that's the NHL. And I just don't think the fans are likely to walk away from the droves. But I could be wrong. You know, I'm quite certain the media will be following that, and, you know, calculating up how many T-shirts get bought and how many beers get bought and how many tickets get bought and comparing it to last year and the year before and so forth. But I do like the fact that the NHL is back. I like hockey. We have a hockey team here in my large city in the Midwest. I don't get out there too often because it's rather pricey. I'm not working right now. I hopefully will be working, as I've said, but then the job I'm taking, I probably won't be that much better off than I am now. I'm living off of some savings. Don't tell anybody that. I'm not supposed to have any savings. Don't tell the bank that. But anyway, I'm living off of my savings, and I allow myself a certain amount that it covers. You know, I can buy groceries and pay my bills and pay my rent and whatnot. And there's not a lot left over. By calculating, I take this job that's discussed $12 to $13 an hour. That's a full time job. So if it comes more at the $12 an hour than the $13 an hour side, I'm probably about in the same boat financially as I am right now, except that I'm not living off my savings. $12 an hour is sort of the very edge of sort of a subsistence kind of living. And then there's also my student loan to think about. You know, that's going to come into play. You know, the student loan has to be paid in this. As soon as I'm making something that's more than the poverty level, which, excuse me, is only like $1,100 a month, and $12 an hour is more like $1,800 a month, so you're way over the $12 an hour, you're way over the poverty line. I'll have to be putting some money into paying off that old student loan, and that probably puts me back squarely about where I am here. So the point of that rather rambling dissertation is, probably not going to too terribly many NHL games unless things change drastically. As I get this something else I can manifest, getting this book I'm working on out and people buying it so that I have a little bit extra money that I can take a lady friend out to lunch every once in a while. So perhaps that could be my sales pitch when it finally comes around. But one thing I do want to thank the NHL people for is we're only going to have a 48-game schedule, and actually that's a boon for me. I think the shorter schedule is much better than the long one. I typically don't even start paying attention to the NBA or the NHL until February anyway, until football's over with. And it's just it's 6 months to try and put your emotions into that and keep track of what's going. I don't care that much, to be perfectly frank. I think the shorter, it's 48 games in 99 days. That's actually probably a little bit too compressed, I think, not for my purposes, but for the purposes of the players, people who actually have to play the games. Maybe 48 games in 4 months instead of 3.5 months would be a little bit better. But I actually prefer the shorter season. So thank you to the NHL this year, and thank you to the NBA last year for providing me with the shorter schedule that I'm certainly much more comfortable with. So there's that. Let me tell you a little bit about the blogs for this week. Again, that's mudtoesasquatch.com. You can find my blogs. And I wrote about, what did I write about? I write on Tuesdays and Fridays. That may change if I get this job. I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up two blog entries a week if I'm working a 40-hour week job, but we'll keep at it. Actually, I wrote on Tuesday about my final admission to myself that this whole graduate school thing has come to a conclusion, and that, you know, that brass ring that I've been chasing, that PhD, is probably not going to happen, at least in this incarnation. It's been close to, it's been about 6 months since I stopped taking classes because my funding ran out. And technically, if I could, scrape together a little bit of money somehow and take one class in the May semester, I could keep the thing going, but it just doesn't seem to be a point. I don't have an academic advisor. I don't have a committee. I don't have a topic. You have to put all that stuff together in a very short time frame to keep it going. And I have to admit, when I think about it, I'm not sure why I would be doing it. I know why I originally did it was an alternative to finding this 40-hour job, 40-hour week job that I'm craving now. At the time I got into it, I was in graduate school for my master's degree. I was working, I was teaching school during the day and going to school at night, and I came to know that I liked going to school better than like teaching school. So I switched to doing an assistantship, a part-time job for the college, and going to school full-time. And once that was done, that was about the same time I was getting into recovery. And I was very, very young in recovery, which is a recovery term that means I hadn't been in it for very long. And I didn't feel strong enough to go out through this whole job-seeking process. which really is a dehumanizing process, I think. So you go out there and sort of sell yourself and be and know that you're in competition with maybe dozens or even hundreds of other people and trying to stand out, me, you know, hire me. It's devastating to one's individuality, I think. Is for me anyway. I know there are other people who are better at it than I am. But I didn't, you know, as I just was getting into this process of trying to, deconstruct where my addiction was coming from and deal with it, I didn't feel I could have energy for that plus energy for a job search and then subsequently a 40-hour-a-week job. And what happened was my master's advisor came to me, and she was trying to put together a PhD cohort there at the branch where I was working at the time. I wasn't at the main campus. I was working at a regional branch where they had a master's program but not a PhD program. She needed four people to start a PhD cohort there at the branch. So I sort of threw my hat into the ring. The PhD program there never didn't. I was the only one. You know, never even got anybody else. And I really wasn't. You know, I didn't think I would qualify. I put some effort into filling out the paperwork, but I didn't. You know, I didn't lose sleep over it. You know, I didn't labor for days over trying to get, you know, perfect answers to these questions. And you know, I'm just called a couple of people I knew to give me recommendations, and I gave some consideration to each of the questions. And they asked you things like, what's your favorite movie and why, and stuff like that. I had to take the GRE test, too. Actually, I think I had to take those before I got into the master's program. But anyway, I turned all that stuff in with, you know, very little expectation that anything was going to come of it, and I ended up being admitted. But you know, I couldn't go to the branch because they weren't going to have the program there. I ended up moving here to my large city in the Midwest. Sort of an unexpected thing. It was a good thing because there were people back in that other town I was living in that I needed to get away from. There were people there and a situation there that I needed to get away from my recovery. And that became a reason, this PhD admission became a reason to do that. So this whole thing has served some purposes. You know, I'm not prepared at all to call it a waste of my time and of, you know, the $108,000 I have to pay back down my student loan. Met some great people, learned a lot of great things. But at the same time, I think that my new advisor, my PhD advisor, and my PhD, my faculty committee, and other faculty members, other professors, I think they sensed that I wasn't. I mean, you have to be really focused on the goal to get a PhD. You have to have something you really, really, really want to study. And then you really, really, because it's going to consume your life for a period of years. You really, 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 really have to want to do it. And I just didn't have that drive. Now, I was there for another reason. I was there for a reason other than getting that PhD. But I'd like to have had it. What I told people was I wanted that was the pinnacle of the academy. And, you know, school was the one thing in my life I had always unquestionably been good at. So I felt like I should go for the top thing that was in school. And of course they kind of nodded their heads because they knew that wasn't going to be enough to drag me through it. And in the end they were correct. And it's taken me some time to admit that. I didn't want to admit that. I didn't want them to be correct. Even though, I mean, I knew everything they were saying was correct. Everything they were saying was right. Everything they were saying was accurate. But I didn't want them to, in the end, just one of those just human things, I guess. You just don't want other people to be right about you. But they were. And here I am, you know, trying to now at that point again where I can't avoid, you know, I've avoided work for about as long as I can. 40-hour-a-week work. I mean, I don't want to denigrate the kind of work. I have great friends working at the university right now still, headed towards their PhDs. And I wish them well, and I know they're working hard. I don't mean to say they're not. They are working very, very, very hard, doing very, very, very important work. And I appreciate them and I respect them for being able to do that. I have to find something that I can do so I can continue to live as an independent person. Of course, I have been invited by my parents to come back and live with them, which it would be the fifth time in my adult life that I have returned back to my parents' house to live with them. I just don't know if I could live with that. I don't know what the alternative. There's time, you know, there's several months still for me to find some way to stay here, but I need to do that. So manifesting heavily this job I'm interviewing you for. If that doesn't happen, it has to be something else, and I have to get much, much more serious about finding this thing that I need to do that will keep me alive while I finish. I say this book is actually a couple of books I have in mind that I want to get out. So that's what that, boy, I spent a lot of time, and that was just Tuesday's blog. Now I get to skip ahead to Friday's blog, which I won't spend near as much time on, although it's also interesting. I was thinking of some of the things, trying to get cranked back up on this book again, and I was thinking of some of the places where this book, the White Horse book, came from. It's neat sometimes to think, because it started off as very different, and it evolves, and it's become such a huge, sprawling sort of story, and it just started off with this tiny little thing, the medicine wheel legend that we use in Nemanja. It's basically a template for all the information that goes into medicine. And to remember, you know, which part of the body belongs with which the thing that we, without getting into it too much, it's all the, you know, it's a, the medicine wheel is a hoop with four directions on it, and then different elements of the Nemanja medicine tradition are encoded into that. It's a mnemonic device, the way you remember things. But the way it's presented in the lessons is that you start off with this thing called the medicine wheel legend, which is about a little boy who gets separated from his parents, or from his mother specifically, and he is looking for his mother and ends up walking the medicine wheel. He ends up on the west door, and he talks to the buffalo. And the north door, he talks to the spirit animal that's at that point on the compass. And the north door, he talks to the wolf, and so forth and so on. He goes all the way around, and he ends up growing to adulthood, and then he's transported back to his village, and he's a boy, a little boy again, but he has all of this wisdom that he's accumulated on his trip around the hoop, and he becomes a great leader. I had thought, and each of us is supposed to consider that story and make it our own in some way, you know, because the medicine wheel is a symbol that each of us as medicine men and women are supposed to incorporate into our healing. So I was thinking about that, and you know, my healing modality is your writing and speaking. How does that, you know, translate into my practice, that legend, other than what I just did, which is to tell you about it. But then it's not really for, at least in that version, it's really not for you. You know, it's for medicine people. How do I make it, or translate into something that's for you? So I started to think about the boy and his mother and what was their story, because the legend doesn't really address that. Well, how do they get split up? You know, and I began to think of this, the story of of a single mother with her child, and they're thinking them in a native village, a prehistoric native village, and they're, you know, they're ostracized, and the mother knows of some danger that's coming, and no one will listen to her, so she's preparing to take her son away, but they're too late, and the danger comes, and they're separated, and the boy is in the woods, and he's wandering, and he's hungry, and he's cold, and he's frightened, and as sort of the conditions that would go into a vision quest, he's walking for days, you know, with nothing to eat except maybe he can pick a few berries or something. And in this sort of stressed, distressed state, he sees the vision, and then he can see the vision of the medicine wheel. So I was writing that story, and I happened to, I went on a hike with some friends. Excuse me, I get a drink here. I went on a hike with some friends, and one of them was Susie, who was Icky's wife, and she told me about a past life regression, a hypnotic past life regression she had done, where she had seen herself as a baby in a leather pouch being fought over by two other people, and one of them was on a white horse, and the one on the white horse is the one who won and drove away with her, or rode away with her, I guess. And as she was telling me the story, I came to know that the child, the female child in the pouch, was the mother of the boy child in the medicine wheel legend that I've been thinking of. So with those two things tied together, I started to think of, you know, of a larger story, a two-generational story of this girl who grew up ostracized. And then she found someone who loved her, but he died and left her with the small child. And they were, you said, the two together against, you know, two against the world kind of thing. And so I've been writing that. I've been going to read that for a while, and it's just keeps getting, you know, more elements just keep coming in. I felt like White Horse, the main character, needed a foil. So there's an enemy character now who is also, you know, through the process of time and writing, became her sister. What else? There's a character from later on in the story, because the sister character dies. Shouldn't be giving you all this information about the book because I want you to read it. But in the early part of the story, her enemy is the sister. In the later part of the story, her enemy becomes her son's wife. You know, her daughter-in-law becomes sort of her opponent. I felt like there needed to be a tie that bound generations together. So there's a medicine man character, and then there's also sort of a surrogate mother character for White Horse. It's someone who goes through the horse. Actually, she goes through the whole story more than the medicine man does. The medicine man walks away at about a midpoint, or maybe two-thirds of the way through. The surrogate mother character is there almost from this. She's introduced in chapter two, and she's there through the whole rest of the book. She's really the only character who makes it all the way through to the end. But it's marvelous to me to go through the book now and see, you know, how far it's come from just that original legend, that medicine wheel story that we learn in medicine man school. So there's that, and I'm feeling a desire to get that back rolling again, because I really want people to see it. I want people to see it and hopefully be able to appreciate it and hopefully buy it, and that becomes a way ultimately that I can make my living. It's not a terribly stable living, you know, writing, but I think it would make me happy. I think it gives me the freedom to come and go as I please. You know, 40 hours is very stable. A 40-hour week is very stable and very, you get benefits with it and all that. But, man, there's just lots of stuff you miss, you know, lots of stuff you can't do. And I think that's what I would work for, by understanding that I need the 40-hour week job until I get to the point where the writing pays off. But I also have the discipline to keep, have to have the discipline to keep doing it. And getting in a position where I can actually offer this and where people can see it. I just have my 90-second warning. I'm trying to look here and see if there's anything else I really need to talk to you about. No, there were a couple of things, but nothing that couldn't. I pulled up this thing about the Django Unchained action figures. If you saw that, there's a big to-do about the action figures they put out for that movie. And Reverend Sharpton and his group was going to boycott all the stores that had them, so they pulled them out of the stores, and now they're selling on eBay for 10 times as much as they were getting in the store. So I'm really hoping that Reverend Sharpton will boycott my book, because that will could make me a rich man. See, that did kind of dovetail into what I was talking about. Let me check the Twitter fall here. Okay, nobody hit me up on Twitter. Maybe if I promote that a little bit better next time. I don't know. I never really got a lot from inline messages. I do like to hear from you, because that lets me know whether what I'm talking about is striking home or not. So you can write me on Gmail or just send out a tweet or whatever it is with that pound sign, this hashtag. So Sasquatch, I'm almost done. Thanks for listening. Come back next week. Talk to you later. Bye.